welcome back to the Infants Podcast. This is Brian.
This is Daryl.
And this, Daryl, is time to decommission the wrench.
I thought this decommissioning Captain Luther. What, come on, here.
No, that's the subtitle.
So, funny enough, looking at it, I don't know why I beamed into the subtitle, but I did not realize the name of the episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, here, let me fix it. I added a word to the subtitle, Decommissioning Captain Luthor 2. T-O-O, meaning also, in proper grammar. Anyway, so this week we are obviously talking Soups and Lolo Episode 8. We are talking the Bad Batch Episode 6 and the Social Justice Sisters. and we have a bunch of news bites about... superhero and comic book related TV shows. it's a whole theme. But anyway, before we get started, how you doing?
It's Friday.
It is today. Friday.
It looks like all the rain is gone for now, and it's summertime.
Yeah.
I believe summer is here to stay.
Yeah, that's good though.
Don't quote me on that.
No. Before we get started, we are going to be talking about this particular bit of news a lot. We have been invited to do a live episode at Fretboard Brewing in Blue Ash, Ohio, on Creek Road. You can go to our Facebook page, go to the events if you want to learn more about it. Actually, I should probably put a link to that in the show notes. Anyway, we will be doing a live show on July 19th. That's a Monday. Starting at 7 until we decide to end. They close at 10, so I'm pretty sure they'll let us go all the way to 10 if we want to.
That's kind of a long time.
Oh, you've never done a 3-hour podcast before.
Well, I haven't.
Actually, all the live ones I've done have been 6 hours long, so because it's been an all-day event. And it gets split into multiple episodes. But anyway, so they have a podcast series going on. We're going to go check out some of the other ones just to get the lay of the land. But if you can make it, that would be great. There will be prizes and swag and, maybe the chance to get called up on stage and test, how geeky you really are.
Test your might.
It's time to find out just how geeky you really are. I live in a world made of nerds.
Or normies.
Yeah, I live in a world made of normies. I'm always having to be careful not to offend or disrespect someone. But you can take it. Anyway. Oh, that's a good call. Anyway, all right, so news bites this week. There's a bunch. A lot of cool stuff happened. Real quick, there was a Neil Gaiman thing that happened, and I was going to talk about it our Thursday, Daryl's Trailerific Thursday videos exclusive to YouTube. But then I decided not to because there was no way I could not be negative about Neil Gaiman. And when I looked back at my notes, I was just attacking him. Because I don't like him. I know, right? It's sacrilegious for a comic book person to be Neil Gaiman, not a fan. But I'm not. And so I decided not to do it.
It's funny you say that. I mean, that's actually a good point. But it's funny you say that you're not a fan because you're the one that turned me on to his book on the Norse mythology.
Well, so here's the thing, though, is that's just kind of a retelling of other Norse stuff. None of what he did there was actually super original. And I like his voice, but if you look at the show that that Terry Pritchard book that he co-wrote,
Good Omens.
Good Omens, right? The reason that book is so good is because of Terry Pritchard.
That's why I will disagree in a way. One, I'm not a fan of Sandman. I've tried to read it a couple times. It just doesn't connect with me. Nothing about it. I don't know. It just, I just gave up because it wasn't drawing me in.
There is a word for Sandman. It's self-indulgent.
Well, I really honestly, I don't think I've read enough of it to be able to say.
Yeah. Anyway, so
that it's like that.
Yeah, but like, so Daryl's doing his Thursday thing. I'm gonna try and pick something up on like Tuesdays or something like that to start doing. But this week I could not get beyond my dislike for Neil Gaiman to actually be like objective. So I just wanted to call that out.
Yeah, so I keep forgetting that he wrote Stardust.
Yeah.
I never read it, but yeah. I thought Daredevil was, pretty good in it. He could see then.
Well, I mean he could see on Downtown Abbey too, so
I'm just looking at his novels, and I've only read American Gods.
Yeah, I did not like American Gods at all.
I liked American Gods. I tried to read Anansi Boys, and it didn't.
Yeah.
I just stopped reading it.
So, I mean, I've tried. Yeah. I've given it a shot. I've tried, and I just don't like it. So
I did read like one of his, like Smoke and Mirrors, his short story collection, which I actually liked. Mm-hmm. I really liked that.
Cool.
But yeah, I'm looking at it. I haven't read much of his stuff at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, I know everybody talks about how good Sandman is, and it's mm-hmm. classic, and it just doesn't. It just didn't do it for me.
Yep.
So
cool. All right. So let's actually move on to News Bites. First up is our favorite cousins in Hollywood, the Amells. Robbie and Stephen Amell to star in Code 8 sequel. So Deadline had the exclusive on this one. Robbie and Stephen Amell are expanding the Code 8 universe after spearheading the crowdfunded original film. The cousins are set to reprise their roles in the sci-fi sequel Code 8 Part 2. Jeff Chan is also returning to direct. Chan also penned the screenplay with Chris Pear, who wrote Code 8, as well as Shireen Lee and Jesse LaVercombe. And the plot centers around the 4% of people living in the fictional Lincoln City who possess special abilities and are often confronted by advanced militarized police technology. We talked about this actually before Daryl was the permanent co-host. We actually did an episode where he was the guest and we talked about this. Daryl turned me on to this movie. I love this movie. I actually bought it for full price on iTunes when it came out.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this movie, and I am very happy to see that all the Chan is returning and Perret is returning to write the script. Because again, for stories like this that are smaller, and it's I won't say just stories like this. In general, when you're doing a sequel, it's very nice to have mm-hmm. the creative talent back.
Absolutely, absolutely, and the fact that this was like a crowdfunded thing. And mm-hmm. it did well. It did okay. I mean, it had a minor theatrical run. It raised $2.5 million on more than 35,000 backers through Indiegogo to make it the second largest crowdfunded original film of all time. And there was a short form series in the works that was going to go on Quibi before Quibi went under and became Roku Plus or whatever it's called. But Stephen Amell had a great, or Robbie, I'm sorry, had a great quote here. There's nothing better than working with your family and friends. Code 8 was the embodiment of that, and I can't wait to get back to work on the sequel. And Stephen said, Code 8 is an incredibly personal and special project for us all. We built the world in the first one, and now we're ready to blow it out, which has me super excited because there's so much more story to tell than what we saw. And even if it doesn't focus on Robbie's character, blowing it out to see more of the I'm just gonna say supers in that world, I think would be really interesting.
Yeah, and I think we said that when we talked about it before. And I know one of the things I said is that I just want to see more of that world. And even if I'm not totally jazzed by the, I mean, there's a certain lack of, I mean, a certain lack of originality, I guess, with the story itself. Again, this is just a treatment in the sense of two sentences of what the story's about.
I mean, it's like Days of Future Past, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of that.
Yeah. And one of the things I said is, is the antagonist in this one, is it going to be more about the system, or are we going to have someone like a representation of that in like a Marcus Sutcliffe was in the first one.
Yeah,
that's what I'm curious about and how they go about it. If this was, I trust it because these are the same people that did the first one.
Yep.
And I'm really, yeah, I want it more. You know, I thought mm-hmm. the first one, I really liked the first one. It had some shortcomings, but it was one of those that, like, if you look at it singularly as a movie, it's okay. It's had some great parts, but it just, the way it opened up another world. And again, it's not a world we haven't seen before, but there was something about theirs, maybe because it was smaller, more intimate, mm-hmm. that really, I really connected with, and I really wanted to see more of.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this news.
So, all right, before we move on in the deadline comments, the very first comment, would love to see Emily Beck Rickards do at least a cameo appearance. Her and Steven were amazing together in Arrow. The reply to that, move on already. Or you could just watch Arrow on Netflix and respect his decision to move forward with his acting producing career.
Yes.
Yeah, let's not put her back in there and like evoke the name of Elicity ever again.
Elicity.
Dude, now they're going to show up and annoy you for the next 5,000 years. Anyway, all right, moving on to the next story. Seth Rogen is rearing his ugly hipster head. So this one comes from IGN. Seth Rogen's CG animated reboot of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has a release date, but it won't be out for a while. Rogen's pedo ass announced on Twitter. Oh, let me rephrase that. Rogen announced on Twitter that it will be out in theaters August 11th, 2023. So this will be the second animated Ninja Turtles reboot story. The last one was TMNT, which had a pretty decent voice cast and was actually kind of a fun story about an immortal dude who was just trying to bring his family back from being stone statues, and the Ninja Turtles needed to stop him opening a portal that would unleash like aliens and war and stuff on the planet Earth. But yeah, so after what Rogan has done to Invincible, dude, my voice just went up at the end there like it was a question.
Yeah.
After what Rogan has done to Invincible, I am not at all interested in him touching my Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. So my notes I have after Invincible, well, need I say more? Meaning I'm not excited about this at all. I don't trust him with any property. I don't trust him like at all with any properties like this, which, and one of the things, this is very interesting because, you know, this is released in 2023. Evidently, we're going to get another animated Turtles movie from Netflix later this year.
Yes.
Called Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, which is tied to the current series.
Yeah.
I think.
So I haven't watched much of that. I have been reading the comic from, you know, the last few years, and I need to get back into it. But
no,
that was
you,
really
you
good.
Don't need to get back that into was... it. After episode 100, when they put Jenica as the main character. So Jenica has her own book, and Jenica is the main character of TMNT, of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the Turtles make cameos now.
That's not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No, it is not. Absolutely not. And it, like, the writer, they have a single word name. But they're a great artist, but not a good writer. And it's very evident, and there's a lot of just self-insertion like is going on with the rest of comics.
Like, my name is not Starfire.
Yeah, exactly. Where the Penguin and Starfire had a baby. I mean, that's what it looks like. I'm sorry.
That's what it looks like. Absolutely,
but
it does.
But no, Thinking Critical did a great piece on this with a guy who's a Ninja Turtle like historian. That was really, really, really good. But yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, I love that IDW comic. But I mean, it's only selling like 5,000 books a month now.
Wow.
I mean, think about that. Like there was a point where it was selling, you know, 20, 30, 40,000 books in a month. Big issues might even reach 100,000, but like maybe, you know, it just depended on what was happening.
Now it's at 5,000.
It's at like 5. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Like they were conjecturing that like IDW is maybe trying to be able to just step away from the license.
Wow.
Yep. Anywho, but yeah, so I don't know. I mean, what else can we say? We're not excited to see Seth Rogen get his grubby pot-soaked hands on anything that we love.
Yeah. I really have no interest. I know I will not be going to the movies to see this.
No.
If I see it at all.
I mean, if I see it, I might sail the seven seas. So.
Yeah.
With Surfshark.
And I mean, and again, Jeff Rowe is attached to directing it, and he's, you know, been involved with Gravity Falls,
yeah.
Connected, which I don't know what Connected is, and Disenchantment, which I know the Gravity Falls and Disenchantment. I can't stand that type of animation. But
Gravity Falls is amazing.
I was about to say, I don't know how good the story is.
So,
but it's like the animation for stuff like that, it turns me off, honestly.
Oh, really? The Gravity Falls animation is not bad. The Disenchanted is just like, I think it's done by Simpsons people, but it's just kind of a Simpsons knockoff. Yeah. And I don't know. I tried to watch it. I made it through 4 episodes, and I was like, I've put more time than this deserves into it.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot about Gravity Falls. For the longest time, I was like, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah, so it's funny, you know. But here's the thing, though: is I also, when Bob's Burgers came out, I was like, "This show isn't gonna last 8 episodes," and it's in like season 11 now. So what do I know? And it's still not—it's still not funny. So people love it, though. It's whatever. To each their own. All right, let's go on to Why the Last Man news.
Ease. It's called Ease. Oh, I'm sorry. We're talking about the book, not the video game. Sorry.
What? Continue.
So there's a game called Ease, and it's like that Wise, but it's pronounced Ease.
No, this is Why the Last Man, because of the chromosome.
Yes.
The chromosome that men have that women don't. Anyway. So Why the Last Man series officially set at a September premiere date, September 13th to be exact. If you're not familiar, it's a comic book series in a post-apocalyptic world written by Brian K. Vaughan, who is one of my 3 favorite comic writers, and art by the amazing Pia Guerrera, let me rephrase that. And this show has been in production several times. This is the first time it's actually got a release date and been picked up for series. I'm actually excited about this. I love FX. I think FX does a great job with everything that they do. And, I am a little concerned about the turnover in the showrunner role that happened. But at the same time, I am willing to give it the benefit of the doubt because it is FX. They also have American Horror Story, talking about that coming back. And then they have American Crime Story, Impeachment. So we know what that's going to be about.
Hard pass.
I will say they were making a big deal about the logo. The logos for all these shows look the same on FX now,
which is
kind of sad.
I don't like that. Yeah.
But you were going to say something.
I was going to say, what's interesting is, and I know this doesn't have to do with Wise, but American Horror Stories they're having an anthology series come out. Where every week is a different story.
Okay, because I was going to say, isn't this show an anthology series?
Yeah, so the show is anthology in the sense that each season is different. This is each episode is different. So I think that's kind of interesting to see that they're going that route with it. I don't know if the original American Horror Story is going to stay on. I haven't watched it in a few years. I've tried to get back to it on Netflix, but
yeah,
just hasn't vibed with me. But I am kind of excited to see what they do with Why. Yeah. And to your point, anytime there's a turnover with a showrunner or something along that deep into production, or whether it be a showrunner for a TV series or a director for a movie, I get antsy, because generally that means there's going to be a lot of issues with the tone and consistency of what we get in a story, because it's going to be two different voices telling it. So I'm hoping this doesn't fall into that same trap, because I do really appreciate the comic. I might not have liked how it ended, but I really, really liked the story.
You didn't like how it ended?
I think I called you when it happened, and I'm like, what the F? That is bullshit.
I loved it. It was so from out of left field. It was great. And it made sense, actually. It really did kind of make sense, the way they did it.
I mean, I don't mind that, but like I couldn't stay. I was like, this... Yeah. And again, when I say I don't like the ending, it did not make me dislike the comic, because sometimes an ending can the miss from Stephen King is a perfect example. The movie changed the ending where it completely messes up everything for me, the journey of the characters throughout the book or throughout the movie.
Right.
And before that, it was a very good adaptation. A lot of things changed, I know. It was a very good adaptation, but the ending itself completely changed the theme of the story.
Yeah.
That didn't happen here. Like you said, it makes sense, but it doesn't mean I liked it. So
you don't have to like it, but you do have to admit it made sense.
It doesn't necessarily have to admit it made sense, but it does make sense. You know, there's a difference. And again, that doesn't change. It doesn't change my enjoyment of the overall product, which was my original.
Although I will say, as we were prepping and we were talking about this and we were going through the IMDb, it's like, you know, there's a lot of women in this. It's like, well, yeah, because there's only one man left in the world. And, you know, there's a couple billion women left. I'm interested to see what happens. The weird thing is the woman playing Hero, who is Yorick's sister, is played by Olivia Thirlby, Thirlby. She's listed as being in all 10 episodes, and it's like Hero doesn't show up for a little while. I saw that, but I thought the lady they cast to play Agent 355 actually looks. Hold on, where'd she go? Ashley Romans looks like the way they drew 355 in the comic, which is cool. And I don't really know her from much of anything, because I didn't watch Shameless, and that was the show she was probably most famous for.
I would say that.
But yeah, and then the girl playing Beth was a weird choice too. The girl who he's trying to get back to is played by Juliana Canfield, who was on a few episodes of Success. She's been in all the episodes of Succession, which I like her. I'm not complaining about her as an actress. I think it was just kind of a weird choice, because she's always comes across as like pretty serious and dour. And Beth's character is very freewheeling and you know, fun. So we'll see. Like, but it's called acting for a reason, right? So I'm not judging anything by anything there. And you know, we'll see if Diane Lane as a mother to Yorick Brown is as much of a monster as she was to Clark Kent.
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
Dude, they were monsters. Monsters. Flat out.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm never not going to talk about that. I mean, we came out of the theater and I was ranting about that. And
yeah.
I'll never forget, because we went to the sneak preview and your friends were looking at me like, Daryl, what's wrong with your buddy? Monsters. They were all normie Superman people too, so it's fine. I get it.
No, Scott. Well, one of the guys, Scott Hughes, actually big in the comics.
But the rest of them.
Yeah. Well, one was. Yeah, the other ones were definite normies. But yeah.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. He still doesn't like that. Man of Steel.
You know, honestly, like I came around on it just because of how much I like Henry Cavill. Still not stoked with the ending of that movie, but that is neither here nor there because that's not what we're talking about. All right, Jupiter's Legacy. Right? Big bucks, no whammy. Stop. Oh, Jupiter's Legacy got the whammy. Okay, so this again coming from Deadline. Jupiter's Legacy has got the axe. All of the stars have been released from their multi-season contracts, so they're free to start taking roles, doing whatever they're doing. And Netflix is now turning Jupiter's Legacy into a universe-spanning anthology franchise. The next live-action Millar World book set to fill the void is Super Crooks. So it looks like they're just going to, like, throw Millar World content on the wall until they see what sticks.
Yeah, which is never a good. It's rarely a good thing.
No, that's a no bueno way to.
That's like Disney sequel trilogy type stuff.
Oh, I don't. Let's.
Was that fighting words there? Almost?
No, I don't think it's that bad. I've been watching a ton of the Screen Rant guy who does the pitch meetings.
Oh, I love him.
Ryan George. Yeah, I fell down the rabbit hole and I went and I watched all the Star Wars. I did. They have a big Star Wars one that's like an hour and a half long, but I just watched the individual ones over the last few days.
Yeah, he's great. Dude, he is so good.
What's he say when something's like simple and.
I bet that'll be hard. Oh, it'll be super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Yeah, super easy, barely an inconvenience. That's what this is. Canceling Jupiter's Legacy for Netflix was super easy and barely an inconvenience because they let the production team take the story of Jupiter's Legacy, throw it into a blender, drink it, poop it out, and then throw it on the wall. Yes, that's graphic.
Yeah.
Considering they did at no point did they have a clear and coherent story. They failed to make anything that resembled a point, and may God have mercy on our souls because we were all dumber for having watched it.
Yeah. And that's not to say, again, if you listen to our review, I enjoyed aspects of it, but also a lot of it fell short because one of the things you said, and this was when I, because I think I watched it before, I started watching it before you, I should say.
Yeah.
And I mentioned the flashbacks and you said, it's not going to be like Arrow, is it? With the every episode having a flashback. And and what you said is that the whole flashback could have been taken care of in the first two episodes.
That should have been every flashback should have been the first two episodes.
Yes.
So,
because there was so much in the flashbacks that did not amount to anything and weren't necessary. His whole trip to, you know,
Kansas.
And when he saw Kurtwood Smith there was no point in that.
Yep.
None.
Yeah. Red Foreman blowing his brains out was unnecessary. Like, honestly, like the pitch meeting for this would have been like, they got on a boat and went to an island and they got powers. Oh, well, why was that? Oh, it was super simple. Barely an inconvenience. Like, because them getting their powers is not the story. And that's what they made the story, is how these people acquired powers and why the world was the way it was. When in reality, it was how these people used their powers and why the world was the way it was. And why their kids were revolting against them. But to have the rest of the Union just constantly turning on Sheldon. Like, it was one thing for Brainwave to do it because he was really the bad guy. It was another thing for Lady Liberty to do it. And, you know, it was just – it was ill-conceived the way they did it. They went for, you know, just looks, you know, style over substance.
Yes.
And they – you know, it fairly gets compared – to The Boys as a, you know, not a good version of The Boys. even though, like, I think it's unfair to put it in the same category as The Boys, but it had that look and feel to it.
Yes. And it just didn't get the drive and audience that they were expecting because of the product that was created.
Yeah. And Josh Duhamel should definitely stick to comedy. Like, he's such a good comedic actor. Like, you know, Transformers was fine, but Transformers was more about robots than soldiers.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, if you watch, like, go watch Buddy Games. He's freaking hilarious in that.
Yeah, I'm halfway through that, and that movie is
hard to watch funny. In one sitting.
Yeah, but so. I actually like him.
It's
yeah.
because Nick Swardson is aggressively unfunny now.
Oh my gosh! Yes,
like Nick Swardson used to be hilarious. Nick Swardson is now aggressively unfunny. And he
I don't think I've ever heard that term before.
Anything that he's in. So yeah. So be on the lookout for Super Crooks. It didn't say when it's coming out, but
so another thing about this, there is going to be a Super Crooks anime, 8-episode anime series, coming out later this year. But the actual live action version that we're talking about just kind of ramping up. Yeah, I thought that was very interesting that there was going to be an anime version or an animated version of this.
Honestly, I don't know why they don't just do it as an animated version.
Yeah, and just don't have Seth Rogen near it.
Go get the team that did Spawn. Have them come in.
Oh, that was
But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like, Millar's got a ton of stuff. Like, Millar was a 30-year overnight success in the comic book industry.
I like that, yeah.
But he's done great work, and he's written really cool stuff. And when he struck out on his own to do books like Kick-Ass and Supercooks and Jupiter's Legacy and, you know, all of this stuff that he's done, he was super successful because he's really good at what he does. But don't chunk your story up and you know, don't change the what is fundamentally the core of your story. That's all I can say about that one. So,
but yeah, like you said, they're like in the future they're looking at doing a Prodigy show.
Yep.
Like from his and also this live action 6-episode spy series. Which there are scant details on this, on this stuff. But yeah, again, like you said, because of the major deal they did, we're going to see a lot more of Millar. And again, I really enjoy his comics. I just, like you said, just don't pay homage, just use the source material as your Bible. Don't get fancy with it. You know, don't try to be ultra creative. Millar was creative when he did that.
Yeah.
So you have the instruction booklet on what to do. Listen to what I'm saying, Seth Rogen, who will never hear what I'm saying. But they had it with Invincible. And granted, I won't put all the blame on him because Kirkman was involved. But with this, I don't know how much Millar is in. I would assume he's involved. I don't know about the day-to-day stuff, but I.
Look, I'm not giving him a free pass for this by any stretch of the imagination, right? I mean, at the end of the day, his name is attached to it, and it's a property that he created. So if it's bad, it's on him. But he's got a plethora of things. Like, I mean, Kingsman is great.
Yeah.
The second Kingsman I love, but I understand it is objectively a bad movie, right?
Yeah,
Or I'm sorry, it is objectively a bad story, but it wasn't because it was based off of something bad. It was just poorly executed.
The execution, yes. Although I did love that final three, like that 2-on-1 fight.
Yeah.
With Oberon.
Yeah. That's what we're calling him, Oberon?
Yeah, that's where we are in Game of Thrones right now. So. Oberon Martell.
Oberon. You can't wear a helmet. It obstructs my vision.
Shh, shh, shh. Hey,
you can't hear me.
Well, she listens to this, so I don't know if we'll be there by the time she.
I just said it obstructs his vision. I didn't say anything about his beep.
And he must see far.
Leonidas.
Leonidas. Yeah, that's eight episodes.
Shh, away. We haven't told what that is yet.
Just saying.
You just ruined it.
I didn't ruin it. You're ruining it by talking about
it. It's a good thing nobody listens to this crap. All right, let's move on to the boring batch. I'm sorry, I keep calling it that. The Bad Batch. Episode 6, Decommissioned, directed by Nathaniel Villanueva, written by Amanda Rose Munoz. Released today, June 4th. Amanda Rose Munoz has been involved with a lot of the Star Wars cartoons. This is her first writing credit. She's been a script supervisor on The Clone Wars, The Resistance, and Rebels. She was actually the script supervisor and continuity person for the final four episodes of The Clone Wars, which...
Oh, really?
...is the best Star Wars has ever been. Right up there with the last season of Rebels, the last six episodes of Rebels. When I saw her name, I had high hopes. You texted me. I'm going to pull my phone up because I don't want to misquote you. You texted me, can't wait to see your BB reaction, laughing face emoji. I replied, that bad. You said normal, meh, but the characters they run into. And I asked more fan service cameos. You said, I guess you could call it that with a sly face. So this was all at 10:26 in the morning. At 10:26, when I turned it on within the first, like I had turned it on when we were going back and forth. I'm sorry, that was at 9:08. At 10:26, I replied to you with two sick face emojis and a puking emoji. And then I used an expletive for the SJW sisters. And they never should have introduced those characters into this world. And adding them to the Bad Batch made the Bad Batch look even worse as jobbers. Especially because the most interesting underlying factor of this series so far is what's going on in Wrecker's head.
Yes.
And that was the only that. And again, I like Omega. I think Omega is an interesting character. She's trying to be a part of the team. And they show her working and she listens and she takes criticism. Like she doesn't just sock off when somebody's like, oh, you're bad at that. And, you know, Sid's like, you need to have a stronger arm. And I'm just jumping all over the place. So, all right. So this episode, Sid sends the Bad Batch to retrieve the data packet from a Separatist tactical droid because they're all being decommissioned on Corellia and destroyed. And since the tactical droids were the ones who fought the Republic, now the Empire, that information is very sought after, especially from, say, the criminal underworld or the Rebellion.
Yeah.
But they get there, they get to Corellia, and they run into Trace and Ratha, who are just insufferable.
So, the funny thing about this is that I did not see their introduction in Clone Wars. So, I have no background,
right.
No dislike, nothing about that with these characters.
You didn't have the built-in sick, pukey face.
Yeah. But halfway through this episode, I was like, I just do not like these characters one bit. Mm-hmm. I was like, I kept trying, but I didn't like them. And then something clicked in my head and I said, let me see who these people are. And I looked and then I looked at the, you know, IMDb for Clone Wars. And that's when I just laughed. I was like, yeah, these are the same people that I was worried about or not worried about, was warned about in Clone Wars. They're just unlikable.
they're just bad. They're bad characters.
They're bad. They're bad characters.
Good. Like, they got Ahsoka into trouble with the Pike Syndicate because the one couldn't get out of her own way and destroyed all of their spice drugs that they were smuggling for them. And, yeah, it was just, you know, I don't know. I did really like when they were on Corellia and Hunter was calling out positions and he's like, Wrecker, you're on Overwatch, and he's like, that's Crosshair's job.
Yeah.
And that really made me laugh. But here's the thing. If you're putting someone on Overwatch, wouldn't making Echo Overwatch make more sense than your main bruiser?
Yeah, because, you know, he's a tank, and, you know, with tanks, you have to be up close and personal. I will say this episode was the first time since, I think, the first episode that they actually looked like they were halfway decent and not, you know, having to get rescued.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, they didn't have to get rescued, but they still, yeah. got jobbed out by the SJW sisters.
Yeah, I just... Again, going back to what I like about this show, or what I liked about this episode, I like Omega. I just love Omega as a character. I'm very curious to see how she develops and what is the mystery surrounding Omega. But also when Wrecker, again, bumps his head, which it's almost a running joke now, but it's going to pay dividends in the future, I know, because you hear that when he says, when he kind of reiterates, a good soldier always.
Yeah, and he doesn't finish the line.
He doesn't finish it, which was, yes, that's what I loved. He doesn't finish that. And then, you know, he comes back and, you know, gets the job done.
Yep.
Those, outside of that, and outside of Hunter's finally looking like the, you know, the squad commander again, in the sense of, like you said, calling out orders, mm-hmm. doing this and that. And it was another, not a bad episode in the sense of what happened. It's just, and there was some action. So I can't say it was boring from an action standpoint, but it was more boring from a story standpoint. And it doesn't help having two characters that are just, that 5 minutes into seeing them on screen, I'm like, I don't like these characters.
Well, yeah, and I feel like with Echo and Tech, there's a whole lot of overlap.
Overlap, yes.
And yeah. I think making Tech the one who turned would have been a little more interesting than Crosshair, because again, Crosshair is my favorite Bad Batch member. Because he did that whole thing with the mirrors when they were running away through the ship, in the third or fourth in the fourth episode of Clone Wars season 7, yeah. So again, the show isn't bad, right? It's good. It's just boring. It's just more of the same every week, and I want something like I want the Omega story to progress. Like, I want that to be the A story. I want them trying to figure out why Fennec Shand is after her, not going and doing the heist of the week poorly. Like, doing the occasional heist as, like, the B story for that episode, or having to fix a ship, or what's going on with Wrecker's head. All make excellent B stories. But the A story should be, hey, we're keeping Omega safe, instead of, we're doing whatever we can to throw Omega into the most dangerous she could possibly be in.
Right.
The warp. It's just this was funny, because when I was getting ready this afternoon, or this morning, sorry, I just had my phone on, and I just had Facebook videos going, and the warp, one of them came up, and it was a People's Court type thing where it's Harvey Dent versus Batman and Robin about child endangerment. And, you know, he was making the excuse that Batman had a non-consensual minor, putting him in danger. And, you know, the reason he wears red is so people shoot at Robin and not Batman. You know, and then he pulls out like Stephanie Brown and Damian and Jason Todd and all the Robins who have all been killed. And Batman's like, most of them came back to life. Actually all three of them. Well, two of them came back to life. Stephanie Brown never actually died. But that's beside the point. Sorry, I digress. But like, as I was watching this, it was like, yeah, these guys should definitely be pulled up on child abuse charges, because she's not even trained. She's lived in a hermetically sealed lab all of her life. I don't understand how she hasn't gotten like massively ill.
Yeah. And also she has a laser bow that she can barely hold, you know, pull back because she's not strong enough consistently, I should say. And yes, so when they land on Corellia and she is like right there running out with them, I thought that was talk about gross negligence on their part.
Yeah. So, you know, but again, like she had the bow and arrow. She couldn't use it very well. She actually only got one good shot off. Right. And it was just like with the blaster, in the first episode where she got that lucky shot off. It was just a lucky shot. I love how if there's anyone out there complaining, oh, Omega is a Marisu, you're wrong. Just stop.
Oh, that's not even, you're absolutely wrong. So that's not even a discussion we'll entertain.
But all right. So I'm glad this episode's over. I'm definitely not going to watch it again. Out of 5, I'd probably give it a 3.
Yeah, I'm at 3 too. And again, I've said this a few times. When I watch one of these and I don't care about watching some of my favorite reactors watch it, that tells you enough about it.
Well, I told you, the dog woke me up at 4:30 in this morning, and any other time with any other Star Wars show, I would have just stayed up and watched it. I wouldn't have bothered going back to bed. I was like, nah, I'm going to go back to bed. I'll watch this after my morning meetings.
Yeah.
Like, I went to the gym, had a bunch of meetings, took a shower, watched it.
You know how much we're over it in this sense of, I mean, this episode, again, not giving us what we want, is that you didn't say, well, out of 5, X, you know, fill in the blanks. You just said, I'll give it a 3.
Yeah. I just, not.
That says it all right there.
Yeah. It's boring. It really is. It's not, like I said, it's not bad. It's just boring.
So
anywho. All right. So moving on to our last topic of the
Not boring.
The best superhero show on the CW history. Not because Smallville was never on the CW. It was on the WB. Holding the Ridge, episode 8, directed by Norma Bailey, written by Christy Korzek. This is not my favorite episode of the season, but it is not far off.
Yes.
We had so many cool reveals this week. Lois, you know, Lois, Bitsy Turlock, Elizabeth Turlock carried the episode.
Absolutely.
Like, no, she doesn't. No, she's getting full respect, Lois. Like, you know, I mean, it's still Supes and Lolo, don't get me wrong. But Lois carried the episode. And, you know, it was one of those things that it was great to see her front and center. But not only did they make her look powerful, but they made her an equal to Superman and John Henry Irons in the matter of how powerful they are in this universe with what they are powerful at. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. And then I loved everything with the boys this week. I thought it was fantastic. If we can get more Jordan episodes like this, I would be very happy.
Yeah. And to carry out on that point, so I have Lois absolutely as the MVP of this episode. Everything about what she does. I love how they started the episode with her talking to the therapist. Funny enough, a few weeks ago, I was talking about how I like when you have a show that says that in media race and then says 2 hours beforehand. I like how they did this one though, where you would just get bits and pieces of her conversation as the story unfolded. And when you talked about her being powerful, mm-hmm. I think that's a massive point, because Jonathan looks at her like that, because he says, and again, we'll get a little bit into the story. He mentions how he's the only one in this family, you know, basically that doesn't have a super, a power, not a superpower, but
he doesn't have
powerful.
A weapon. He doesn't have a weapon.
Yes. He doesn't have a weapon. So, yes.
I thought, I've always looked at like Clark and Jonathan as like the pair, and then Jordan and Lois is the pair. And I feel like that's how Lois probably looks at it as well a little bit. And seeing the two of them team up was really cool. And the bond that was formed with them in this episode, which I think goes beyond not just the bond that was formed with them, but the respect that the two of them developed for John Henry Irons.
Yes.
I think was really, 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 really cool. And I'm just going to say it, like, Wole Park is the most underrated part of this show.
Yeah. He continues to impress me.
The spinoff, Steel. I'd be 100% in for that.
I would be all for that. I would be all for that.
The other thing, like, you know, if John David Washington isn't available, maybe like Wole could play Black Panther.
You know that ship has sailed already, don't you?
Well, you know, they just opened Avengers Campus, and they talk about T'Challa. Like, he's there. Like, they've already recast him. What's the big deal? Seriously, they don't have Shuri running around as Black Panther there.
Yeah.
So, of course, they do have Black Widow, but she's constantly falling off of things. It's very weird.
Monster.
the whole thing with the RV this week was interesting, which is essentially a Wikipedia of, you know, John's world, or John Henry Irons, because there's two Johns, of his world, and getting to watch that version of Clark, who has no relation to Lois or the boys at all, right? Because Jonathan did ask, like, there's versions of everybody in every different world. And, you know, you notice Lois didn't tell him, well, there's not a version of you on his world.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of became very obvious, like, very quickly. But the look on his face when she didn't, like, say, yeah, like, even you, what was kind of weird, right? Because, you know, when it was still Supergirl, you know, John was a baby. He was the only kid. And then when the crisis event happened, that's when Clark was flying back and you know, Lois is like, yeah, the twins. And he was like, huh?
Yeah, that was. And it just, I think that also makes it work so much better, right? Having, you know, these Jonathan and Jordan. And yep. Speaking of Jordan, I'm talking about Jordan Elsass, the actor who plays Jonathan.
Yeah.
Dude, he is so good in this episode.
Yep.
And just how he matches, like, in scenes, even for a young actor, he matches in scenes, you know, that intensity needed. And sometimes it's not what he says. It's like you said, it's a look he gives. And that you can see, like, that of him, like, breaking down inside with, mm-hmm. when some of the things happen.
He had a great emotive face this week.
Yes.
Like, he does not suffer from Tom Welling face at all. as a young actor. Neither one of them do. But no, I mean, I liked it. I liked like the C or D storyline that's going on with Kyle.
Yes.
Kyle has kind of turned a corner as an interesting character now. He's not just the drunk fire chief who doesn't really love his smoking hot wife. To now he wants something and Lana's in the way of it. And it's going to be really interesting to watch him break bad.
And one of the things I put is he was what the unexpected star in the sense of, you know, you're actually, especially that scene. It was so touching, that scene where they're, you know, he's, yeah, hey, I got my guitar, and how excited he was getting when Sarah was talking about maybe, you know, about the talent show. Mm-hmm. Just that banter because he's in a way they've sort of made up. He's sort of made up with Lana, although you know this episode throws a wrench in things when LL, what's her name,
Lar,
purposefully throws that wrench in it.
Yep.
But yeah, he's a character that you know he has his demons, and he wants to. I think he's getting to the point he wants to be. He knows he needs to be better. Mm-hmm. He knows he needs to be a better father. He knows he needs to be a better husband. But he has that, you know, that addiction or that something that he can't kind of get over from himself.
He has an inferiority complex.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what drives him with everything that he does to prove he's bigger or prove he's better than what he looks at himself as.
Yes. And that's why, like you said, when he breaks bad, because that's I do believe that somewhere down the road that's going to happen, whether it's because he gets exposed to X kryptonite, which that's very interesting what we hear about the X kryptonite, or something else. Yeah, he's going to get a carrot dangled in front of him where and in his mind, he's going to be, this will help me prove.
Yeah.
Help me prove that I am who I could be. And it will prove to my family that I am the good husband, that I am the good father that I can be. And it's going to go all to hell for everybody involved.
Did they ever introduce Bizarro in Supergirl?
I don't.
How interesting would it be if he becomes Bizarro? I know it breaks the, you know, the clone of Superman that didn't work out, right? But like Superman has to give him like some sort of a blood transfusion type thing and it makes him Bizarro. Like, how cool would that be? And to watch Eric Valdez play that role would be interesting.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or it's in the case where they have the DNA, but for whatever reason it's the instability, it needs a human host, and they use him as the human host experiment. Something like that.
Yeah, that could be cool.
I mean, yeah, because I really liked him in this episode. It's just, he slowly, and I liked his development, you know, because when we first see him, he's just not, he's an ass.
Yeah.
And seeing him slowly become, you know, a likable character his flaws are still there. And knowing that, and almost seeing that train wreck, like seeing, you know, when you see a car and you know that person's not paying attention and you know they're going to hit something in front of them because they're not paying attention. And that's what this is. You're just waiting for the train wreck with this guy. Yeah. But I'm still, like, this scene, this week especially, made him a sympathetic character in my mind, in the sense of rooting for him and rooting for him to be able to become that good dad, become that good husband that he wants to be for his family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And then the DOD stuff this week was really, really good. Not to be confused with the DEO from Supergirl. The actual Department of Defense. It was really cool. Superman finding out about Hell. I thought was interesting. 7734. The weapons that they had were kind of cool to see a glimpse of that. Getting the soldier that had infiltrated the DOD with the X kryptonite was a great little reveal, because they were trying to make you think it was the big guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't really buy that. And I was like, come on, they haven't been this obvious about anything. And it wasn't until the little dude put his hand on him, like, thank you.
Yeah. And there's another thing that this show has done such a good job on. Your favorite word, restraint. There were several instances.
That is not my favorite word. My favorite word is sedition. We've been over this.
So when we're talking about shows and stuff, and the reasoning is, the first example of that is when Lois just completely rips into Jordan, or Jonathan, I'm sorry. Yeah. And I mean, stuff that she says to him, and yeah, and again, I love how the conversation slowly peels, you know, they peel away the conversation with her therapist on it.
Right.
But Clark's reaction to that is very even though you could tell he disagreed with how she said it, mm-hmm. but he waited till Jonathan was out of the room. He asked her if she was okay. And I love when she was like, I'm fine. Okay, I'm going to take that as a no. and how he handles the whole thing. It could have been, you know, when in a lot of shows, that would have turned into another fight. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, they put it in a way where Clark can read the situation, show his support without being overly, you know, aggressive in the sense of you did this wrong, mm-hmm. and you know, putting her more on the defensive. The way he put her at ease, almost, where he says, look, I want to be the person you come to when there are issues, mm-hmm. but if I just want you to be able to get these issues out, if I'm not that person, that's fine. What about, and then that's how they get, you know, we get to her, you know, seeing this therapist.
Yep.
The other example is after, you know, Clark learns about Hell, it could have turned out to be a, with him and, you know, the general, it could have turned out to be another situation where it's like, you broke my trust. I can never trust you again.
Right.
But instead, I really like how General Lane says, you know, when Clark says it's about trust, and he says, I understand that. And it's going to and I know it's going to take me a long time for me to earn your trust back. Mm-hmm. Both of those situations could have blown up. And you see a lot of shows would have taken that opportunity to create unnecessary conflict, considering that, you know, there's already conflict around it. An unnecessary confrontation. And instead they held the reins.
Right.
And said, let us, you know, show this, that these people are adults.
Well, the other way they did that was when I think they were trying to tease, like, hey, maybe there's going to be a love triangle between John Henry Irons, Lois, and Superman. And they put that to bed in this episode too, because he was like, you're not her.
Yes.
Like, that was great. I loved it. And I love that scene between the two of them. And, you know, because here's the thing. It's Superman and Lois. It's Clark and Lois. It is they are an unbreakable bond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that John Henry Irons still doesn't know that Clark Kent is Superman tells you everything you need to know. He doesn't know the whole story of Superman. He just knows,
yeah,
that his world's Kal-El, you know, he visioned his wife to death on national, yeah, television, maybe international television. Who knows?
Yeah.
So there's that. Seeing him fly the ship. Wait, was that this week?
Yeah. And when the Superman was trying to break into it.
Yep.
That just, and again, this is one of those things that I have so many questions about what happened over there.
It's great. They're
and I love how they're giving it to us.
Slowly rolling it out.
Slowly.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's, they're, as they roll it out, it's in support of whatever the story is that week. I mean, Natalie is obviously dead because that world is gone. The crisis destroyed that planet.
Right.
You know, Ollie couldn't save everyone in the crisis event. So there's that. Clark coming to save Jonathan in the murder RV was really good. That was that scene where he was like, I'm not powerful like the rest of you. And I think it's like, no, you actually really are powerful, dude.
Yeah. And I know you always say that, you know, this, the dad side of Clark that we, I mean, this is a version of Clark we've never gotten.
Nerd dad Clark Kent is my favorite thing, yeah, about the show.
I just
down.
Absolutely love this, and how Tyler Hoechlin plays it. It's just like, for example, the going back to the after Lois, you know, yelled at Jonathan, the look on Clark's face was like, okay, I'm stepping into a, you know, a pit full of vipers right here. I gotta watch my step.
There's a pit full of landmines and there's only one possible step to get out of this, so I'm just gonna, yeah, fly away from it. But no, here's the thing. Here's what Tyler Hoechlin does best as Clark Kent. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
He smiles.
Yes.
That is what he does absolute best as Clark Kent. And he's got a couple different versions of his smile. It's usually kind of goofy, but he smiles. And then he also smiles as Superman. And, you know, I think, considering he's a relatively diminutive guy, he has a very big shadow.
Right. I mean, to that point, the first time we see him on this show, or one of, as Superman, he's like has this goofy smile. Thanks. My mom made it for me.
My mom made it for me.
I mean, that's that 2 second line right there is what sold me on the show as potentially being something what I was looking for.
I mean, that just 5 minute right there. That 5 minute intro that caught everybody up to speed with what was going on sold me. I was at the end of that 5 minutes, there was no way I wasn't in for at least 3 episodes.
Yeah, I was smiling like he was. That's how I remember that. I was smiling like he was. And I mean, like getting goosebumps
thinking about it
right now.
We're obviously not the only people who feel this way. So, I mean, this show was averaging about 1.25 million. It was one of the highest, like, key demo shows on TV. And then it went on its hiatus, and we're not going to talk about the conspiracies about that. But it came back to about half of its audience. It lost a little over 45%. The second week, it gained about 100,000, or almost 60,000 viewers back. This week, it's almost gained 180 total thousand viewers back. It was just over 900,000. That number's going to go up because Nielsen's been having some issues reporting their numbers on time. So I don't think it's going to break a million this week, but next week, if it's not back at a million, I'll be shocked.
Yeah. Shocked. Which is, I mean, that is such good news to hear that because I love this show. I mean, I don't like this show. I love this show.
Well, I mean, we used to say, is it Tuesday yet? But now that you watched on the app with me, it's is it Wednesday yet? And to be honest, the fact that they show an extended version of the episode is fantastic. My only problem is they should put it on HBO Max as well.
Yes, they should.
Not just put it on HBO Max, air it live on HBO Max.
Oh, that would open this up to another audience who, again, I was going to say I have HBO Max, but there are reasons, obviously, why I have HBO Max. But how many people have something
by
like these
the
streams?
Way, next time you log into HBO Max, there are now pictures in the icons.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I picked yours.
Okay.
There's a whole theme.
But, okay. But just think of the people that don't, that just have the streaming services and say they turn on HBO Max and say, what's this Superman and Lois?
Superman airs live on Tuesday nights on HBO Max. Or I could wait till the next day and watch an extended episode. Hell yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's all Warner Brothers or Discovery Warner Brothers. So why not? Like, I've never understood why they don't do that kind of cross-pollination. I don't think it would cannibalize the TV ratings at all.
No.
Because, like, I don't have cable. I don't, like, you know, we have an antenna. I typically forget we have it. Plus, the CW feed is not very stable, so I typically don't watch it. So I wait and watch it on the app the next day and have to deal with goddamn commercials. Hey, CW, put out, like, a $4 version of the app so I cannot watch commercials. anyway. So this episode ends with everybody back at the Kent homestead. John Henry Irons gets in the RV. He tells the AI, like, hey, delete Captain Luther. My name is John. And then the AI is like, well, where do you want to go, John? He said, I don't know. Why don't you just turn off for a while? I want to drive. The next time we see him, he will be Steel.
I wouldn't mind that. And also, we do have to, one of the things we didn't talk about is that this ex-kryptonite is not giving people, it doesn't seem that it's giving people powers necessarily. Well, in certain instances.
Well, it's like that power show that we watched on Netflix or movie.
Project Power.
Like, it's blowing people up. It's like Extremis. Like, to be honest, it's closer to Extremis from Iron Man 3 than anything else. But, but it's a crystal, not a nanotechnology.
Yeah. But also, and this is where I'm kind of confused, because the exposure to the ex-kryptonite gave Tag his powers, I'm assuming.
Yes.
But as Clark was talking to General Lane, he said, like, the guy that blew up a couple episodes ago said, you're not alone. And what John Henry Irons thinks is Kryptonians Is there some way that Edge is inserting Kryptonian sentience? Because that's the word Clark used.
Yeah.
Like sentience into another host.
And yeah, maybe. And then using the X Kryptonite to solidify that bond.
Yeah. So that is very, I'm very interested to see what his end game,
well,
didn't how he got
Supergirl
to that.
Supergirl have like a generation ship with a bunch of Kryptonian, like,
I know, like her aunt. Yeah, her aunt was in there, and then some, there were other Kryptonians. From what I remember.
Yeah.
I think Toph was agreeing with us in that.
She
like,
absolutely
yes,
does.
You're right. So
okay, so I mean, we like this. Definitely go watch this episode. I think. All right. So out of five. Oh, I got a good one. Out of five RVAIs, what do you give this one?
I give this 4.5. Lois was, again, Elizabeth Tulloch was just spectacular.
Yep.
Jordan Elsass as Jonathan, you know, just held that energy. Those two were the best parts of it. Wole Park continues to impress me. You know, Tyler Hoechlin, he's gonna be Tyler Hoechlin. He's just been great as Supes and as Clark.
Yeah.
And you know, Eric Daldez as Kyle had a coming out party for me in the sense of rooting for, like, truly rooting for him to get things done. But I think we know that it's just not going to end well.
Right. No, I agree. I'm a 4.5 as well. Like I said, it's not my favorite episode, but it's not far off.
Yeah.
So. Cool. All right. Quick reminder, check out ifthispodcast.com. It's links to everything. Share the link. Check out our Facebook page, and actually go to Instagram because go to the Facebook page because it's an event. If you want to come, sign up. It's free on July the 19th. It's a Monday. It'll be a lot of fun. We have plans. If you like what you hear, check us out on YouTube as well, because we're starting to actually do more there, and Daryl's Trailerific Thursday is a great example of that.
Yep.
All right. Any last words, buddy?
Yeah, just be on the lookout for I got a couple of reviews that are in the hopper in the next week or so with Lucifer Season B. I do want to talk about a little bit more of Demon Slayer, although that's 26 episodes, so that might be a while before I get to that. And a couple of more things. Maybe Sweet Tooth, that just came out today on Netflix. But yeah, I'm definitely going to have some stuff, you know, coming out, you know, during midweek in the next week or two. So on the lookout for that.
I got to watch the pilot of Sweet Tooth before it came out. And if you were a fan of the comic, be prepared. It's a Disneyized version of the show. It's not nearly as the comic.
The comic
is really, really good. And
another one on my list then.
It's just another where they're trying to open it up to. I relate it to Lock and Key. The Netflix Lock and Key, not the real Lock and Key that was the comic book. Actually, if you really like Lock and Key, go to Audible and download the radio play. It's amazing.
Oh, they have a radio play for that.
Yeah,
that's
Catherine Janeway
cool.
plays Mrs. Locke. What's her name? Kate Mulgrew. It's got a huge cast. It's amazing. But yeah. All right. Any last words?
That's it.
All right. Have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is. And we'll talk to you guys later. Bye.